Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Non-sports story of the day that'll make you smile and smirk. Submitted for your approval, Dontavius Oakley, age 35, who actually came up with a pretty good scam. He was hacking computers and extorting people out of a motel in Tampa, Florida. He was able to get himself $81,000 with he and an accomplice. But lo and behold, one thing that you have to do is not get that particular money sent to you via FedEx. And the fact that they were able to track all these monetary payments to this one roadway inn in Tampa, Florida, Basically, cops were able to perform a sting operation, throw some surveillance in there, and then he and another man, Carlton Thomas, drove away from the hotel. They got pulled over and arrested. The packages they seized had a total of $81,000 in them and might have had more beyond that in their bank accounts. They were arrested on charges of organized fraud and grand theft. And Thomas also charged with driving with a counterfeit license and also charged with an outstanding warrant in the state of New Jersey. Man! just that close. That close. I'm glad they got these guys. See, it's not always a guy walking into your kitchen naked and cooking eggs like the story was last night. That one was a little weird. That was kind of one where you just kind of have to laugh. But this one has a happy ending in that they caught the guys, they caught the culprits. We'll come back with an NFL ground and pound. Jason Longshore is going to join us to talk some soccer 20 minutes from right now as the Five Stripes get ready for the second leg with Mataqua. We'll also do more on the Braves' first spring training game as well in our final hour with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Atlanta Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Willie P is in the house, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hope you're enjoying yourself on this beautiful Saturday afternoon in the A. We actually got a nice day out of ourselves here. The sun came back yesterday from its basically 5 days away, and now we have some sun that's actually accompanied with some nice weather. And because of that, we have what I think is a very nice spring-looking type day. All in time for the rain to come back on Monday and Tuesday and more in the middle of next week. It's spring, so we're getting close to spring, so we're not allowed to moan and whine about it until next month if it's still like this. So be that as it may, we've had a fun day. Braves 5-0 winners over the Baltimore Orioles. Spring training is officially underway. We'll get to see Bryce Wilson for the first time tomorrow. Saw Felix Hernandez look good. A lot of movement on his changeup. Did not allow a hit in his two innings of work. Also had a pair of strikeouts. Braves scored 3 runs before the chairs were even warm at the brand new Cool Today Park in Northport, Florida. Speaking of spring training, there is some hefty stuff going on right now on the other side of the Florida coast, and that is the opening spring training game for the Houston Astros out in West Palm Beach. The Nationals, who play down near there as well, basically had their fans invade the Astros' home park and In many cases, depending on how you feel about the Astros cheating scandal, they are doing the Lord's work in booing the Astros every which way during their pregame warm-ups and pregame introductions. The only cheer that was really noticeable was for former Nationals manager Dusty Baker. We'll see whether or not there's some retaliation involved, and we'll keep an eye on that as that game gets underway, whether or not anything out of the ordinary happens for any of the prognosticators from the Houston Astros cheating scandal of the last couple of years. We'll talk five-stripe soccer with Jason Longshore coming up about 15 minutes from right now. He, of course, our Atlanta United soccer analyst, along with Mike Conti, for coverage beginning Tuesday night between Atlanta United and FC Motagua. They will play at Fifth Third Bank Stadium in Kennesaw. The 8 p.m. kickoff. You'll hear the pregame coverage at 7:30. I'll be up there. It's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to that after the 1-1 draw that Atlanta United earned in Honduras, which also included an away goal, an all-important one, which could serve as a tiebreak in the event of a scoreless draw for Atlanta United. But first, before we do anything involving that, time for an NFL ground and pound. The NFL and the Players Association have reached a bit of an impasse. The owners tried to strong-arm something into the Players Association involving the new collective bargaining agreement, which they're hoping to actually get started before the league year begins on March 18th. They want a 17-game schedule. They want an extra playoff team in per conference, so they'll go from 12 to 14. What they're giving the players is a greater percentage of the revenue and also some relaxed regulations on things like marijuana and CBD testing. But the one thing that the players aren't getting is the full share of that 17th game. In fact, the 17th game check would be capped at $250,000 per game, which means if you make more than that per game, you are, as we say in the old country, SOL. And because of that, those on the higher end of the NFL salary scale are balking and calling foul. The leadership committee, which comprises 11 people, voted 6-5 on the opposition to bring this to the Players Association reps at large. There was supposed to be a vote taken on this, which would need two-thirds of the reps to actually approve it before it went to a full vote of all the players in the NFL, and we didn't even get there. The players are hoping to get themselves back to the bargaining table this upcoming week and try and iron out some of the inconsistencies from that CBA. Told you last night that those who are handicapping Tom Brady's potential 2020 destination don't seem to think that a return to New England is in the cards. No, no. The two most likely destinations, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, are not New England for Tom Brady. They are, in fact, either Tennessee or the Las Vegas Raiders. It was the Raiders, of course, who made reports and made waves earlier this offseason by offering a reported $60 million in a two-year proposed deal to Brady. Many believe that the Patriots can and will match that, but it all remains to be seen whether or not we see a potential desire for greener pastures for Brady. And there's always been this potential, what I would call bad, I don't want to say bad blood because that's overstating it. Between those two, there's always been this notion that one could succeed without the other. I personally don't think you can. I think they need each other. Not to get all romantic, but I think one success breeds the other. The one thing that Brady has concerns over, though, is the offensive talent that is not on the Patriot roster. And I'm sure, of course, there is a desire from the Patriots organization to try and figure out, okay, when exactly can we move on and think about the future of the organization as it sits for them. Here's one for you. The National Football League, in a landmark type of decision will allow some NFL stadiums to have betting lounges, and teams will be able to accept sponsorships from sportsbook operators as the league tries to enter the new world order where the emphasis on gambling is not hush-hush and more out in the open as more states begin to legalize gambling. Here's the caveat, though. They're still prohibiting the actual sports books to be run at the NFL stadiums, and there will not be any physical betting windows. So what you can do, basically, is go into this lounge, see lines up on the screen, but you'll have to place your bet either via a mobile app or some other third party. So it's like the NFL's like, we're so close, but not so much. Eventually, the NFL is going to figure out, hey, we can actually get in on some of this action. And I'm wondering if it's going to have to take, I'm wondering if it's going to take something else coming to pass, whether it's the ratings falling or the media deal not coming out the way they want to. I mean, there's nothing wrong necessarily with the way the NFL is doing business right now, but think about all the missed revenue that they could possibly draw in from gambling, at least directly. And they figured out a way to do this in Europe. Like, English Premier League teams, they are way out in the open with it. You have, you know, whether it's Chelsea or Tottenham Hotspur or Man U, they'll sit out there and say, oh, William Hill has us plus 300 to score a goal in the second half. They'll just come right out and do it. And you can go inside the stadium and actually bet on that inside the game. I don't think it's that long before we see that happening on the NFL scale once they figure out a way to stop holding their noses when it comes to that particular frame of mind. I'm always a fan of eating contests. Baltimore Ravens starting left guard Bradley Bozeman took down a 72-ounce steak in a legendary eating challenge in Texas. The Big Texan Steak Ranch in Amarillo, Texas, which was made famous on the very popular Fox show King of the Hill. 72-ounce steak. He finished it in 48 minutes and 8 seconds. Apparently, to the restaurant, 110,000 people have attempted the challenge, which comes with a one-hour time limit. He became just the 9,828th person to finish it, which is less than 9%. And he got a T-shirt that says, quote, I ate it all. Pretty good stuff. 25-year-old Bozeman said the key was switching from steak sauce. The restaurant provided it in a soup bowl. Switched from that to honey midway through. But he said he wasn't sure he was going to make it with 2 ounces to go. He said he told his wife to shut off the video camera because he felt like he was going to lose it all. But he also was able to enjoy some carrot cake afterwards. A former Falcon is on the market. Taylor Gabriel has been released by the Chicago Bears. He, along with Prince Amukamara, were cut to clear about $16.5 million of cap space for the Chicago Bears, while leaving just $3 million in dead cap, producing a net savings of $13.5 million. They only had $5 million to spare, did Chicago. We talked earlier in the show with Zach Moore of OverTheCap.com when it comes and concerns the Falcons' cap issues. They have no such relief. They're going to have to figure out a creative way to get themselves some cap space, either with some restructures or some tough decisions, a.k.a. not bringing back Austin Hooper, maybe cutting Trufant, maybe cutting Devontae Freeman, but they freed up $13.5 million, did Chicago, with those two moves. As one unnamed member of the 92.9 The Game staff, who shall remain nameless, when told about the former Falcon being available on the block, he said, no, no, 1,000 times no. There seems to be a prevailing notion that Taylor Gabriel might end up surfacing with another Falcon connection, and not necessarily with the Falcons themselves, but maybe with former Falcons offensive coordinator and current San Francisco head coach Kyle Shanahan. They could maybe put him in a Deebo Samuel-esque role when it comes to a potential signing with a low ceiling during the offseason. That's your NFL Ground and Pound for this February the 23rd. We'll come back and talk the footy of a different sort. Beautiful game chatter with our good friend Jason Longshore, who course, covers the Atlanta United and will be there on Tuesday night when they take on Motagua. Perhaps sensing some potential hostility tonight in West Palm Beach, the Astros have trotted out what many believe is a, this isn't even a B lineup, that's like a D lineup. I don't know any of these darn guys. And that's their spring training home opener in Palm Beach against Max Scherzer. So basically what they're trying to do is head off any particular retaliation at the pass in their Grapefruit League opener. Maybe we'll actually see some, maybe some actual stars. Maybe they can put their money where their mouth is and maybe get some retribution out of that in some effect. But be that as it may, if you were looking for a pound of flesh tonight from Scherzer and the Nationals for the Houston Astros, you're not going to get it in the Grapefruit League. Lid lifter, easy for me to say. Braves, of course, beat the Orioles earlier today 5-0. But time to talk some soccer. Jason Longshore joins us, our Atlanta United soccer analyst on the WadeFord.com hotline. A week from today, Atlanta United opens up the MLS season, but on Tuesday night, second leg of the CONCACAF Champions League. And Jason, all things considered, a very greatly desired result with a 1-1 draw and a road goal in Honduras.
Yeah, it's a job well done down in Honduras in San Pedro Sula. And when you look at the other results around CONCACAF Champions League for MLS teams, I think the biggest difference in the way the MLS teams performed is how Atlanta United closed the game out. You know, they closed the game out in a pretty strong way and got the desired result.
I personally think that, you know, some of the concerns like we saw against Leones Negros, that was, a big part of what I wanted to see from them in this match, which was moving from defense to offense and being able to play in that variable style that we've talked about throughout this preseason. How much of that do you think came out, especially after they had conceded that opening goal?
Yeah, it came out of the three preseason games where you played three, different kinds of opponents in Elfsborg from Sweden and Birmingham Legion on the road that sat back and allowed you to carry the play. And then Leones Negros, who pressed you, you got a good variety of experience, and you go down to Motagua on a pitch that, look, it was difficult to play the way Atlanta wants to play there. You couldn't really build out of the back. You couldn't really combine too well. So you had to play a different kind of game. And then the injury to Miles Robinson and a slight injury to Brooks Lennon that forced you into a four-man back line, which you only trained a couple of times in before getting ready to play that match. So all that adaptability, all that flexibility really came into play.
There's going to be obviously some more flexibility with the lineup. You'll be able to get Joseto back and Mulroney back based on the visa issues not necessarily being a factor for them. What exactly do you think needs to happen for Atlanta United? How much easier will it be for them to dictate the terms of the match on Tuesday night?
Well, they'll be able to play their game, and they'll be able to carry the play. And this is a team that wants to dominate matches with the ball. It's hard to do on a field that is slow and bumpy because if you are off on a pass, you can get caught. On a pitch like the one at Fifth Third Bank Stadium, you're going to be able to play that game. And if you get a player like Josetu into the team who's so good on the ball, it's going to be even stronger in just keeping the ball away from Motagua. I think the key here, though, is to get an early goal. You don't want to sweat this one because as we saw from Motagua, look, they're kind of predictable. They're going to play direct. They're going to try to get the ball out wide and put in crosses. But the goal that they scored was one great cross out of 30 on the night and one great finish. They do have that in them.
I'm not going to make you say anything that's going to get you in trouble.
Uh-oh.
But that was a dirty team the other night. Am I wrong?
I wouldn't say dirty.
Aggressive. Very aggressive.
Go ask Stephen Fry from Seattle about dirty when they faced Olympia on Thursday. He took a studs-up challenge to the rib cage that didn't see a red card. It was physical. It's expected in Central America. I thought the way the match went, the referee struggled to maintain kind of order in it, especially late in the first half and early in the second half as it really did ramp up. It was the referee's first CONCACAF Champions League match. I thought it showed. He didn't manage it very well. But look, Atlanta can get physical, too. Atlanta's a team that things get into that where it turns into a little bit of a street fight. Atlanta United has players who can hold their own.
Certainly so. They definitely do. We're talking with Jason Longshore, Atlanta United soccer analyst here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Coverage Tuesday night beginning at 7:30 for an 8 p.m. kick in Kennesaw against Motagua. What do you envision might be the availability of some of those guys who've been in and out of the lineup, guys like Bello and Lennon and obviously Miles Robinson? Are we still out with those guys?
Miles Robinson trained today, according to pictures posted by Atlanta United from this morning's training session, so that's a good sign. Don't know if that means he's ready to start. Is he available off the bench? Is he a little more likely for next Saturday in Nashville? We'll have to wait and see. Frank DeBoer will speak to the media on Monday. They'll do a training session up at Fifth Third Bank Stadium. And then he'll speak to the assembled media. There should be some media coming up from Honduras for this one as well. Bello with the concussion, it is really a wait-and-see kind of thing. Lennon came on and played well in the second half for about 30 minutes or so down in Honduras. He should be back to full speed. That'll give them a little more flexibility in terms of playing four in the back or playing the 3-4-3 that they've done a lot of in preseason.
Do you think Cusetu starts, or do you think he comes off the bench?
It's hard to say. It's just hard to know how much he's trained and how much he is in sync with this group. I'm curious to see where he ends up in this team. If he ends up playing in a little more attack-minded role, or if he plays in one of those central midfield roles in the 3-4-3, I just love what he can bring to the team with his ability on the ball. And that's something that this club has prioritized from day one. Players who love to have the ball, players who are comfortable with the ball at their feet, and players who don't get afraid of pressure in big moments. So Setu brings all that to the table and more.
Talking with Jason Longshore, Atlanta United soccer analyst, I'm more just curious at what type of atmosphere I'm going to see Tuesday night, because I know there might be a little weather involved. It's going to be a little chilly, maybe some rain, but everything I've heard from people who say, because it'll be my first time taking the Kennesaw environment in person, is that it's a much more rowdy and intimate feel because of the fact that that pitch is so far enclosed instead of what you see at the Benz.
Yeah, you're so close to the field. It's a smaller crowd. So, the people who are getting these tickets are the people who pretty much have been there from day one. It's a season ticket holder base of over 36,000, and Fifth Third Bank doesn't hold that many. So,
right.
The longer you've been there, had these tickets, the more likely you're going to get tickets to a match like this one. It's rowdy, it's loud, it's intense, and with what's on the line here, a potential quarterfinal in the CONCACAF Champions League against Club America, it's going to be a fun night on Tuesday, especially if Atlanta gets an early goal.
How much more, I would say, palatable is the start to the MLS schedule for Atlanta United compared to last year? Because I see playing at Nashville and then hosting FC Cincinnati as being a lot easier than, say, going up against a DC United team a year ago that many thought could win the conference.
Yeah, I completely agree. Getting Nashville on the road, which is a little tricky because it's their debut match. There'll be a lot of emotion there. But then getting Cincinnati, who's a team in flux again with their manager having to resign this week and some controversy, you get to ease into the MLS season just a little bit. Kansas City follows that Cincinnati match. So it allows you to kind of look at progression and step by step. You're not thrown in at the deep end with a really difficult match on the road in the first week like last year at DC. It's a little more manageable with a trip up to Nashville and probably quite a few fans that these players will recognize in the stands. It's going to be a lot of Atlanta folks in Music City.
Yeah, we're going to have a big party up there as well on Friday with Dukes and Bell, and a special stoppage time as well from 5 until 7, which you'll be able to hear right here live on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And the other thing, too, and not that this didn't have an effect on them last year positively, but given the way they performed in the preseason and, of course, in the first match, and depending on how they look on Tuesday night against Motagua, I almost look at this group as being about as prepared as any MLS side could be going into the season, and maybe even have a leg up on the rest of their competitors, not just because of the fact that you have some continuity with the coaching staff, but also the fact that you've seen some high-level competition and performed admirably.
Yeah, I agree. This preseason schedule has perfectly prepared Atlanta United for what's to come. I don't know if LAFC, who struggled in Game 1 in Leon, I don't know if they prepared themselves in this kind of way for CONCACAF. The experience of last year going to Herediano, struggling with the first game, I think the club learned a lot of things about how to structure a preseason to be not peaking at this point because it's impossible to, but much better prepared to kind of dig in and get that result.
Jason Longshore, looking forward to it on Tuesday night, man. And I'll try to save you one in the stands if I can keep it dry. That's all I can try and say.
Yeah, good luck with that. Maybe over for the full-time report after the match.
That could happen. That could happen. Appreciate it as well, always, bud.
Thanks, Will.
That is Jason Longshore joining us here. You can follow him on Twitter, at Longshoe, as we get ready for Tuesday night against Motagua. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. We'll come back. A little bit of the air taken out of the sails from what we were going to see tonight between Trey versus Luca, but I think we saw something very special earlier this week involving one of those two guys, and I'll explain what it might mean for them, not only over the next 25 games, but what we might see next year with the Atlanta Hawks, and also a recap of what we saw today from our Atlanta Braves. Willie P. in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P. is in the building, counting you down to Hawks and Mavericks tonight. Of course, Braves victorious today, 5-0. I don't know if he really could gather anything of an observation standpoint. Very garden variety victory against a team that's going to have a lot of trouble competing in 2020, the Baltimore Orioles. But you had a very good night from, or very good afternoon, I should say, from Felix Hernandez. 2 innings, 2 strikeouts, did not allow a hit. That part of it is very, very strong and easy to be favorable with. And because of that, you're going to have a lot of people who think about that game in a very positive manner. Of course, tomorrow is the big test for Bryce Wilson, first big one for him coming on the mound, trying to vie for that number 5 spot in the rotation. We'll see whether or not he can put his name in the mix as the Braves get ready for another Grapefruit League game. They take on, I believe, the Chicago White Sox, if I'm not mixing that incorrectly there. As the Braves, Detroit Tigers on Sunday, and then Monday against the Blue Jays, the Braves will start Max Fried. So, a little bit of the air out of the sails tonight for Trey and the Hawks taking on the Luka-less Dallas Mavericks, but consider this instead. Another opportunity for Trey Young to show out after a 50-point night the other evening. And for a team that is largely different than it was before the All-Star break, even leading into the All-Star break, there's a lot more excitement around this team, and you really can't pinpoint really a moment where it all really kind of turned, but there was a different energy on Thursday night inside State Farm Arena. And I wonder if we're starting to see Trey Young start to become a leader at a very young age. This is Trey on the conversation he had with the team returning from the All-Star break.
We didn't really necessarily put a lot of pressure on ourselves. I mean, this is something we want to do. It takes time, especially with the young team we have. So we just want to continue to get better. We want to start out hot, obviously, after the All-Star break and just play hard. You can't control if your shot's going to go in or that, but you can control your effort. That's all we were talking about. And just doing that yesterday, I think, is a big reason why we won.
They will play only 26 games after the All-Star break, 25, including tonight. And I also think that Thursday night was the kind of moment that not only has an impact on Hawks fans, but something that's felt league-wide. There's always going to be the comparison between Luka and Trey. I think there's no avoiding that. But it's not just about Trey. It's about what the other part of that trade does for the Hawks. I think we're starting to see the maturation and transformation of Cam Reddish into a legitimate NBA player, and not the kind of player who's just a dude, but somebody who can be a running mate. If you can have Trey, Cam, and DeAndre Hunter turn into a three-headed monster that almost resembles or does resemble a big three type situation that's homegrown, then you start to look like what Travis and the Brain Trust built with the Golden State Warriors. It's not just about going out and getting free agents and trying to convince them to come to Atlanta. It's about winning in the draft. And I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, John Collins is going to turn into Draymond Green and, you know, Trey will turn into Steph Curry and you know, you're going to have Cam Reddish turn into Klay Thompson. No. I'm not saying that any of that is actually happening. But what I think you do have to look into is that we have to start getting used to the notion that maybe these moves were made so that this group could grow together. Because you needed to tear it down to the studs to have any real hope of getting beyond that, you know, win 50 in a regular season but lose out in the playoffs type ceiling that you had created for yourself when you had some of these aging veterans on this roster when you did. And what Thursday night resembles more of in my mind is that this team is learning how to win on a night-in and night-out basis in the NBA. Now, it's going to take some recuperation, and this is something that Trey spoke to, the fact that you expounded and really spent a lot of emotion in playing a heavyweight-type battle against Miami to try and collect themselves into this game tonight against a Dallas team that will come in motivated.
I've done it before. I've been there before. So for me, I mean, it's just another day. I mean, a special moment, special occasion last night. But still, I know how to get my mind right for the next day. Just get prepared, get some sleep. That's really all I did. I just go home, relax, watch some TV, and then same thing, different day.
And it won't be necessarily Trey versus Luka, but there will be those types of comparisons made throughout the evening. I think, you know, the national media will continue to do so, but you have to remember that Cam was part of that trade as well. And because of that, you have to look towards the two of them being one product. If the two of them can combine and provide you the type of product that gets you a sustained level of success here in Atlanta, then this trade's a win for the Hawks. Luka Doncic alone was not going to make this group be a winner. But Trey plus Cam plus DeAndre plus another piece in this offseason that comes either via the draft or via free agency or trade, then you're talking about building a roster. It was not enough for them to go out and get a high lottery pick in the draft 2 years ago to build as the face of your franchise. It was about a structure and a mindset that this team, while it needs a leader, it also needs running mates. And the desire to have Trey work it out with DeAndre and with Cam and with John Collins, who you think about in this offseason, the number one priority for the Hawks is basically trying to figure out what you want to do with him. Because if you believe that he is an important part of this roster, you have to start thinking about making sure that he's happy. Because with one more year on his deal, he has the opportunity to sign a max in the offseason. And that decision is not made by me, thank goodness. Because in my mind, if you're looking at whether or not you want to make that happen, it's going to be a very, very hard truth for, I think, a lot of Hawks fans to realize and say, you know, can you have the ability to keep this guy on your roster? Is that the best way to make this thing happen? Because I think it is. But does that preclude you from getting somebody else in the free agency class of 2021? Because It has nothing to do with the class currently. The free agent class of 2020 is garbage. And the parts of it that are not garbage have people basically already promised to other places. And I don't necessarily think that I'm convinced about the draft class either. So you have to make some pretty tough decisions if you are the Hawks front office in this offseason. But I want to know just exactly how you feel where it pertains to John Collins. I think I want him back. I know there's a lot of hurt feelings based off the 25-game suspension, but I see his worth on this roster. And I also have to see how he meshes with Clint Capela in the final 25 games or 15 games or how many that you get to see him with. But it's going to be a fun, exciting time for the Hawks, and it's just starting right now with Trae Young starting to come into his own. One more quickie segment before we get you on out to State Farm Arena for the Hawks and Mavs tonight. Willie P will put a bow on it with you here next on Sports Radio 90. Looking forward to tonight. A lot on the table here. We've got the Wilder Fury fight, which I'm going to go see down here in Midtown. We'll see if it provides the kind of moxie that we're looking for from a heavyweight bout. I'm very much looking forward to seeing whether or not we get the type of statement, heavyweight bout type moment that we've been looking for that we haven't gotten out of, you know, some of these other fights of recent memory. We were talking about it also with Paul Crane, just kind of how the deunification of boxing has kind of devolved the sport over the course of the last couple of years. Maybe this fight can maybe win back some fans, especially with the promotion coming from both Fox and ESPN of trying to give you an event that at least becomes more compelling than boxing and by extension the heavyweight division hasn't given you over, say, the last 20 years. But we've had a lot of promotion for it this week in Vegas. Dukes and Bell did a fantastic job out there getting you ready for it, having, you know, guys like Bob Arum and having the two fighters as well talk. And I'm very curious to see just exactly what we will look at tonight between Wilder and Fury. Also excited to see what we see from the Hawks tonight. I don't want to see a potential letdown because of the fact that you are facing a team that is going to be a bit behind the eight ball with the Mavericks, of course, not having Luka Doncic, not having Kristaps Porzingis. The last thing you want to see is them lay an egg against a team that is less than whole. So we'll see whether or not the Hawks can find a way to take advantage of a potential gift thrown their way. We'll see how Trae follows up his 50-point performance from the other night against Miami. This is a stretch for the Hawks that's rather important because after tonight, they head back on the road. They play Philadelphia on Monday and then back home to take on the Magic and Nets Wednesday and Friday. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning from 10 o'clock to 2 when I'm joined by John Fricke. Until then, we say so long. Mike Conti and the Hawks pregame show comes your way next. For Siobhan Prazer, I'm Willie P, and I'm out.
The following is a presentation of Radio.com Sports, presented by 5-Hour Energy.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.